This is Ahead of the Curve, a Banker's Podcast. The CFPB 1071 rule has been difficult to keep up with over the past year, as lawsuits and legislative override attempts have delayed compliance dates. In this episode, we'll be discussing the CFPB 1071 rule and its implications for financial institutions with our guest, Polly King. Polly is a senior consultant at Abrigo, and she'll be breaking down the complexities of the rule and providing insights on how financial institutions can prepare for compliance. Despite its challenges, this rule might present an opportunity for banks and credit unions to streamline their processes and improve their data analysis. Let's dive in.
So Section 1071 has been around a while. It's really part of the 2010 Dodd-Frank Act. And it was finalized as a rule by the CFPB in March of 2023. And they attached it to Reg B, the Equal Credit Opportunity Act. It's now subpart B of Reg B. And the gist of it really is to facilitate enforcement of the fair lending laws. If you think about fair lending, if you think about HMDA, which is the consumer version of this, the CFPB is really looking to identify any disparate treatment in pricing between non-minority borrowers and minority borrowers, except that the 1071 pertains to small business owners. And they do define small business owners as direct ownership in the small business of anything 25% or more.
All right, that sounds like a thorough overview. I know that there are some complexities in this rule. Could you start out with what transactions will be covered?
Sure. So it's really any small business loan, line of credit, for example. And it does include refis. So if you have a small business who's going to pay off a loan and then refi it with a new loan, that would be included. Does not include renewals unless the applicant is requesting additional funds. And then one other area which a lot of our clients get hung up on is it applies to small business credit cards. So you could have, for example, a credit union that is more consumer oriented from a lending perspective, but they do offer small business credit cards. So keep that in mind as a financial institution when evaluating whether or not you have to comply.
Definitely. And which financial institutions will be impacted?
So it's any financial institution that originated at least 100 of those types of credit transactions I just mentioned in each of the years 2022 and 2023. And again, it is just to small businesses. And there is a definition of small business that the financial institutions need to be aware of. So a small business for purposes of this rule is defined as a business that had gross annual revenues of $5 million or less in each of the two preceding calendar years prior to their applying for the loan. So if they're applying for the loan in 2024, then they would need to have gross annual revenue of no more than $5 million for 2022 as well as 2023.
All right. So say I'm a financial institution, I meet those specifications. What do I do now?
Yeah, so if you are a financial institution that has to comply with HMDA, the Home Mortgage Disclosure Act today, just think of this as a very similar regulation, except again, it pertains to small business applicants. And there's about 22 plus data points that you will need to start capturing on the principal owners of the business. Good news is you already capture a lot of those data points because they're related to underwriting, but there are a lot of others that you don't capture today. For example, demographic information of the applicant.
Yeah.
Again, you're really wanting to consider principal ownership of 25% or more of the equity of the small business.
So when do financial institutions need to comply?
Okay, so we'll get into this a little more detail because there have been a lot of events that have occurred since the rule came out in March 2023. So essentially, there are three tiers of compliance. The first tier, obviously, are your larger financial institutions, and those would be defined as financial institutions that had at least 2,500 originations of those covered credit transactions in each of the years 2022 and 2023. Now, that was in that particular tier, there was an original compliance date of October 2024. And we'll talk in a minute about some events that have occurred that have changed those initial compliance dates. Tier two is institutions that have had at least 500 to 2,499 of those originations in each of the years 22 and 23. And their original date was April 2025. And then last are our smaller institutions known as Tier 3, they would have had to have had at least 100 to 499 originations of those transactions in the same periods, and their original compliance date was January of 2026. One thing I want to make sure I'm really clear on here is the test for compliance, as you'll see, is based upon originations of those types of transactions. The data that you collect is not on the originations, but on the applications. So two very distinct tests for do you have to comply versus when are you collecting the data?
Definitely. So the smaller banks and credit unions should watch how the larger players are handling the new schedule and consider how, honestly, how technology partners can help if they don't already have solid data analysis in place.
And that's a great point, Kate. So it's similar to what I always said with CECL. You know, the smaller institutions didn't have to comply until later on, so they were able to take advantage of seeing what their larger peers were doing to comply with that. So same situation here. The smaller institutions will really have a lot of advantages in, you know, seeing what their peers have done.
And that's especially good because there's been a lot of back and forth with this legislation.
There really has, and it's still very up in the air. But just to go through a few of the things that have occurred, and you all have probably heard of at least some of this, but there were a couple of lawsuits that came out right after the rule was finalized. So one was in Texas, one was in Kentucky. In addition to those lawsuits, both the House and the Senate voted to override this rule. However, the president did veto that. So I don't think there's any other relief that's going to occur within the government. There also was a separate lawsuit that was filed against the CFPB, citing that their funding sources are unconstitutional. And this was filed by a group of finance companies against the CFPB in the Fifth Circuit Court. Well, the Fifth Circuit Court did side with the CFPB. It was appealed, and the appeals court sided with the plaintiffs. So you've got you've got the court siding with the CFPB and then the appeals court siding with the plaintiffs. So what do? You take it to the Supreme Court. So in October of 2023, the Supreme Court heard the arguments on both sides. And so what came out of that was for 2024, what you really need to be focusing on as a financial institution is the Supreme Court's final decision on that initial lawsuit. And they have until June of 2024 to make a decision. Hopefully it will be before June, but certainly as a financial institution, you'll want to keep an eye on that Supreme Court decision. So in addition to that, the other thing that we'll want to focus on is the presidential election. Not to get into too much of that, but I think dependent upon which way that goes, there could be some relief or not be relief from that office. So two events to really focus on as a financial institution in 2024. Regardless of what comes out of those events, there has been an injunction that was granted in September of 2023 by a federal judge to delay those compliance dates that I just went over with you until that Supreme Court decision is made. So right now, the initial compliance dates have been stayed, as they say. And once, let's say that the Supreme Court does rule in favor of the CFPB, then the courts have said, we want an extension of the deadlines for the Tier 1, 2, and 3 compliance dates. So either way, if it does continue to move forward the rule, then the compliance dates that were initially set up will be delayed. We don't know how far out they'll be delayed yet, but they definitely will be extended.
Right. But erring on the side of caution, treating those dates as seriously as we can just to be prepared, because there likely will be some challenges to setting all of this up. Could you go over some of those challenges to compliance that small banks might face?
Sure. So, you know, I'm a former banker, and because most of the regs have been pointed toward consumers, the business lending was always a little bit looser, maybe not in your organization, but in most of the institutions that Abrigo talks with, it is a looser process. For example, the financial institutions are not always getting formal applications from their small business applicants. They may not be going through a more formal workflow process as it relates to small business loans. So, you know, if you've been through a core conversion, then I would sort of compare this to that. For example, you really are probably going to have to automate the process if it's not automated today. You'll have to get formal applications if you're not doing that today. Because think about it, you've got to have some way of tracking those 22 plus data points. So you'll want to look at, you know, what are my options for automating the small business application process? How am I going to map my data into those options? How am I going to validate the data? How am I going to train the staff to collect the data? So a lot of additional considerations that you're probably not doing today. Second, not to get into too much of the details of the rule, but there is a firewall provision. You don't have to comply with that firewall provision, but if you choose not to, then you do have to disclose to the applicant that the person making the decision on the loan can see the demographic information that they submit. Yeah, a couple other things related to pricing. So how are you going to reconcile your existing pricing culture with the requirements of 1071 in order to avoid those fair lending issues? How are you going to separate formal credit applications with probably a more relationship-driven process today? And then last but not least, you've got that lending group perhaps that says, you know, we've never have to do this before. We've always done it this way. So certainly there will be So certainly there will be some cultural challenges as well.
So what are some pertinent questions to ask yourself when you're preparing for this rule?
Well, I think, you know, how far do you need to go from an automation standpoint will depend a lot on what percentage of your customer base will be impacted. So certainly take a look at the data today to determine, you know, are we at 10%, 25%, or are we closer to, you know, 80 and up? Do you have rate sheets today? You may want to consider more objective pricing, more objective rate sheets, so that when your lenders are quoting rates, they're actually working off of an objective sheet. Probably not doing that as much today. And then how are you going to track any loan pricing exceptions from your current pricing practices that you're doing today? How will this change your loan pricing practices? So really a lot of questions to ask yourself around how you're doing your loan pricing today versus how you might need to button that up in order to comply with the rule.
And how do you recommend financial institutions start to prepare?
So great question. I would go ahead and start today, even with some of these unknowns that I mentioned earlier. I think one of the keys here is education. So again, if your small business process is not as tight as your consumer, then you will have to train on the rule. The rule itself is about 600 plus pages. Wow. So a very voluminous rule that you'll want to pack into some, you know, more abbreviated training. I think not only training on the technical aspect of the rule, but the real challenge again here will be the cultural training, where you'll need to make sure that all of your lenders, all of your credit staff are on the same page with regard to the rule. So that is how I would go ahead and start the process, is the training and education. And I'd actually start that pretty soon, assuming that we will have to move forward with the rule. So that's really the first step. The second one really is take an sort of an inventory or assessment of what you're doing today, and not only in the data collection, maybe what you're missing today from the 22 plus data points that will be required, but also just look at your small business lending process. You know, are you doing some good things today that you can pivot to 1071? Where are your weaknesses today, where you may have to make some adjustments before you can comply? So really do sort of a assessment, a drill down into your processes today, and be able to say, yeah, we can keep this process. We may have to enhance what we're doing in this area. And I mentioned data, so you'll want to look at, you know, what are you not collecting today that you need to start collecting, and get that inventory taken as well. Then once you've kind of got the stage set, then you'll certainly want to firm up your policies and procedures. As you know, when regulators come in to a financial institution, that's typically the first thing they ask for is, let me see your 1071 policies and procedures. So firm those up. And then once you've made a decision on how you're going to do your process, what automated solution you're going to use, you know, what small business lending process you're going to use, then you'll certainly want to do some testing prior to going live with the CFPB to get out any kinks that you may have in the data collection process, maybe some retraining opportunities with your lenders and that type of thing. So give yourself enough time to put the plan in process, to train folks, as well as to test before you actually submit that first data to the CFPB.
Sure. Sounds like a lot of work, but if you have the right attitude about it, it also sounds like an interesting opportunity to just streamline a lot of processes that you might not have looked at recently and get solid data analysis in place that you might not be using your data to its fullest potential until you have to examine something like this. So this will be really interesting to watch unfold.
Well, and you make a really good point. I think a positive, because we want to think optimistically, right?
Yeah.
I think a positive that may come out of the rule is perhaps some enhancement to your net interest margin. So again, a lot of financial institutions are less rigid in their pricing with small business lending. Certainly, you still want to keep that relationship aspect of the process. But there's probably some opportunity to more objectively price your loans so that you know, you can get maybe a little more yield off of your loans if your lenders are all on the same page as it relates to, you know, the standard loan pricing. So just kind of another way to look at it, and you know, try to see some positive from all of the additional regulation.
Good perspective. And after compliance deadlines, what do financial institutions need to stay aware of from here on out?
Yeah, so, you know, once you get compliant, you'll probably take a deep breath and feel like everything's done, it's over with, but you're really just getting started, right? So what you'll want to do is put some monitoring procedures in place. So some of the things that the CFPB will be looking at is, you know, what has been the response rates from your loan applicants? Are you actually getting that demographic information? And if your response rates are low, maybe they're low in just a particular branch or maybe a particular loan officer is not getting mm-hmm. responses. So there may be some retraining opportunities of specific branches of specific lenders, because, you know, what the CFPB wants to do is get that data, right? So if you're not getting that data, then, you know, it could be that the applicant just doesn't want to respond, but more likely it may be your process or the way that you're going about asking for that data. So you'll want to have some reports and some data monitoring in place to track things like that. You'll also want to look at, you know, what are the number of apps that I received from minorities versus non-minorities? Am I penetrating that small business minority owner market? You know, what are the number of loans not only from applicants of minorities, but also minority applicants, but also are we originating minority loans? So not only the applicants, mm-hmm. but also how many are we originating? And then, you know, are there any actual pricing exceptions or even perceived ones? So you may want to run a report of the different pricing that you've charged minorities versus non. And if there are exceptions, do you have the appropriate documentation to support why, for example, you charged the minority more interest rate than you did the non-minority? So, you know, a lot of different ways to continue to monitor the rule and to do that, to be very proactive doing that before you have to submit that data on an annual basis to the CFPB.
Very good. Well, Paula, thank you so much for your expertise on this topic. You broke down a lot of information very clearly, and we appreciate it. And for those of you who already have a relationship with Abrigo, we have experts providing educational webinars at state and regional conferences and other forums. And then we have complimentary 1071 resources on our website. And based on the expertise of people like Paula and our ongoing work with banks and credit unions, we're trying to share best practices and new developments via white papers, infographics, FAQ blogs, et cetera. So please reach out if you have questions. Check out our website for additional resources. And Paula, hope to have you on again if there are any upcoming developments with this crazy legislation.
I'd be happy to do that. And certainly 2024 will be the year that you want to watch to see what actually, you know, ends up happening with this rule. But thanks for your time, Kate.
Yeah, thank you. Stay tuned, everyone.
And you can find this and future episodes on Abrigo.com or on your favorite podcast app or platform. Just search Ahead of the Curve, a banker's podcast, or search Abrigo, and you can hit subscribe so you don't miss out on future episodes. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back with our next episode as soon as we can.